Hello, and welcome to our webinar, Ways to Accompany Others During COVID-19. Thank you for sticking with us through our technical difficulties last week and for joining us here today. I'm Brian Rood, the project coordinator for the Catholic Apostolate Center, and I'll be moderating today's webinar. I'd like to begin by welcoming our presenters for today. Our first presenter is Father Frank Donio, the director of the Catholic Apostolate Center and a member of the Society of the Catholic Apostolate, the Palatine Fathers and Brothers. Father Frank is a multi-time alumnus of the Catholic University of America, where he received his Bachelor of Arts in History, a Master of Arts in Church History, and a doctorate in ministry in adult spiritual formation. His academic background, teaching, presenting, pastoral, and administrative work are focused primarily around evangelization, spiritual formation, and pastoral practice that fosters greater co-responsibility and collaboration among all the baptized. Father Frank is also a part-time faculty member in the School of Theology and Religious Studies at the Catholic University of America, where he teaches in the Certificate of Pastoral Ministry Program. Father Frank, thank you for joining us.
Good to be here, Brian. Thank you. And thank you for moderating.
Our next presenter is Dr. Susan Timoney. Dr. Timoney is the Associate Dean for Undergraduate Studies in the School of Theology and Religious Studies at the Catholic University of America. Dr. Timoney received her doctorate in sacred theology at the Pontifical University of St. Thomas Aquinas, where she focused on Christian spirituality and the feminine dimension of discipleship. Before her tenure at CUA, Dr. Timoney served as the Secretary for Pastoral Ministry and Social Concerns for the Archdiocese of Washington. Dr. Timoney also serves as an advisor for the Catholic Apostolate Center. Dr. Timoney, thank you for being with us.
Thank you for having me today.
Our final presenter is Jonathan Lewis, the Assistant Secretary for Pastoral Ministry and Social Concerns for the Archdiocese of Washington. Jonathan is an alumnus of both the Catholic University of America, where he received his bachelor's degree in philosophy, and the University of Notre Dame, where he completed an MA in theology through the ECHO program. Jonathan has worked for the Archdiocese for 7 years and currently works with the offices of Young Adult and Campus Ministry, Family Life, Youth Ministry, and Parish Evangelization. Prior to working in the Archdiocese of Washington, Jonathan worked in parish ministry for 5 years in the fields of religious education, youth ministry, and young adult ministry, serving in the Diocese of Wilmington and the Archdiocese of San Francisco. Welcome, Jonathan.
Thanks, Brian.
So as we're getting started, as you'll see in the chat, if you have any questions throughout our conversation, please feel free to drop them in the questions tab. We're going to have time after our conversation here to enter into some of your questions and a dialogue with you. So we thought it was good to start briefly by setting a foundation. The title of our webinar is Ways to Accompany Others During COVID-19. But I think we should first spend a little bit of time talking about what accompaniment is, so we all know that we're on the same page. So Father Frank, briefly, can you just give us a quick, set the foundation here? What do we mean when we say accompaniment?
Well, I think I'm going to use the book that we have published Colin Campbell and Tom Karani, and it's called The Art of Accompaniment: Theological, Spiritual, and Practical Elements of Building a More Relational Church. And on our website, it's available as an ebook. It also is available for sale. But what we say in that is spiritual accompaniment is the apostolate of intentional relationship that is oriented toward a definitive direction of growth in holiness and transformation in the person of Christ. So the key thing to understand is that this is headed always toward Christ. Yesterday, we had the gospel of the road to Emmaus. And the Lord walked with, he met them where they were, the two disciples. He walked with them, he listened to them, he taught them. And then at the breaking of the bread, they realized their hearts were burning. And then they went forth and proclaimed. So there's a piece of this that's very intentional. This relationship is known by both parties as something that people are walking together. It's an apostolate, meaning it doesn't necessarily have to be something that's organized by the parish. It could be, or a church ministry, but it's something that somebody who is baptized can go forth and do with another person. And it can be done, the ultimate direction, of course, is always deeper life in Christ. And that's not just for the person accompanied, that's for the person who's also accompanying as well.
Dr. Timoney, Jonathan, do you have anything to add? That was a great, great quick definition of accompaniment, Father Frank.
I think I so appreciated that Father Frank was able to highlight that it's something that doesn't need to be formal and organized. And I think that that's really helpful for people to think about the ways in which they live their faith outside of the liturgy, outside of the context of organized parish ministry. But what are the ways that we have this opportunity to accompany in other areas of our life? That's really helpful, I think.
I think too, this conversation of accompaniment has a very intuitive dimension to it as we describe or define something. I think each of us have been accompanied in our journey of faith at some point. And so it can be helpful as we try to describe, well, what is this? What does it look like? Just to think back in our own journeys of faith, or who are those people who walked with us? Who are the people who invested in us? We've all had teachers, but not all of them have really accompanied us. We've all had coaches, but not all of them have been real mentors in faith and life. And so I think as we sort of sift back through our experience of childhood and emerging adulthood, we probably pick up along the way a few of those people who stand up with us and continue to walk with us through a particular transition of life, or maybe even long-term. And if we, as we sort of break open what was successful, what did they do, what made an impact in us in that relationship, we probably have a pretty foundational sense in our own lives and hearts of what it means to be a person of accompaniment and what that ministry looks like.
Yeah, one of the things, I know Dr. Timoney and I have discussed this a lot, is that the practice of accompaniment isn't new, right? This is extended. Obviously, Father Frank brought up the road to Emmaus. This goes back to the time of Jesus. We can draw it back to the book of Genesis. But the word accompaniment is somewhat new. And sometimes I think when people are off put by accompaniment, it's because it's a new word that we're kind of still unfamiliar with. But just like you said, Jonathan, when we kind of take a step back and look at our lives, we'll notice that there are people that walked with us, maybe not in the same way, or maybe using different terms because it was at a different time, but still, they still accompanied us. With all that being said, I think we need to then ask, with the current situation of COVID-19, where we're forced into social distancing, into a quarantine of sorts, What are then the biggest challenges that we face right now to our understanding of accompaniment that you all laid out so well? Dr. Timoney, I wonder if you have any thoughts on those challenges that have presented themselves.
I think the first is sometimes we really rely on our pastors, on the homily on Sunday, on our time together at church or in our Bible study or with our outreach group, to remind ourselves of what it means to live as a disciple. And so I think when those groups or those experiences have been taken away from us for the moment, all of a sudden it makes us realize, hey, what comes naturally to me? Or where am I not so confident in feeling like I can invite a group of friends to pray together virtually? Or I can suggest that maybe we would continue the Bible study online. And so I think it's both a marvelous opportunity to test our confidence in our ability, right, to live as disciples, to want to continue this experience of community that we have at the parish. But it also may be helping us realize where we need to gain confidence, what skills we maybe need to learn, and also perhaps a new way to think about what kinds of support can our parishes give us for living our faith Monday through Saturday as well.
I think that's a very important point. You know, in the moment that sometimes we get into a way of functioning that is, we get so used to it. And then when that's swept away, it's hard then to make a transition, but it's one that we're called to especially at this point that we did a webinar that Jonathan led last week that talks about or 2 weeks ago at this point talks about just calling, and it doesn't necessarily have to be organized by the parish. In that case, it was organized by the parish, but. I have a community member who just started a list of people to call. And that's been really something that he's been taken aback and at the reaction of people that they are very appreciative of that kind of accompaniment. And now it's gone, you know, it's very intentional. And now since this has gone long, it's not just a one time. It's now, and it continues the kind of pastoral care that he was just giving in general, even before.
Yeah, I think too, one of the challenges in our contemporary environment, both during this COVID sort of isolation in a sense, and beforehand, is as Susan touched on already, there's this sense of sort of a caste system that we often have in the Catholic Church, where there's the priests who are like the real holy people and the important people, or maybe other sort of people who've been clericalized, maybe like the celebrity culture that's present, I think, in Catholicism. So the people who have really big followers on social media or YouTube videos are very popular. People who wear skinny jeans and speak on a stage at big conferences, that those are the real important Catholics, but I don't really know what I can do. And I think that caste system is really dangerous and really limits a phrase that was used in Father Frank's intro of all the baptized, right? That each of us, by virtue of our baptism, are just called to live that in ordinary ways. Pope Francis continues to hammer this almost every month. He says something that touches on this theme, that all of us are called. And he says that actually in the Joy of the Gospel, right? We must initiate everyone into this art of accompaniment. But I think, you know, for Catholic Christians who are so used to this ritual of faith, we're very used to and initiated into this practice of maybe observing, not necessarily entering into a full practice of active participation in the Mass. And so there becomes a sense, well, I'm going to observe something. I'm not really in the game. And Francis continues to say, get in the game, get off the couch, be active. And so I think one of the challenges is we're kind of rusty at being active in that way, or we think it's other people's jobs in an interpersonal way. Sherry Waddell, who wrote the lovely book, Forming Intentional Disciples, talked about the importance of breaking the silence, that as Catholics and as Catholic Christians especially, there's kind of this awkward silence around talking about our faith. We're just, studies show, in fact, that the people of all ages who are Catholic talk less about their practice of religion than other people of faith. And so we sort of need to break those Thanksgiving dinnertime rules of not talking about religion, to be willing to share our story, to reframe what evangelization is, and to walk with people by being a person who asks really good questions and to imitate Jesus in that way.
Jonathan, I was really struck this week. We had two doctoral and ministry presentations, and both students chose to focus on the domestic church. And one of the things they talked about was that's not familiar language to many Catholics. And this idea that moms and dads or husbands and wives or single people have this invitation but responsibility to create in their homes an expression of what it means to be church, what it means to be Catholic. And I've been delighted to see that I think one of the graces of the pandemic is going to be that some people really did some terrific things, you know, creating a space on Sunday morning before they gathered the family to live stream Mass. A group of moms in my neighborhood had kids do a Stations of the Cross and put them up in the window, and then on Good Friday invited families to walk the Stations of the Cross. And so I hope we can use this moment to both say that's exactly what we're talking about in terms of what it means to be the domestic church, and that that's something that we do in addition to what happens on Sunday and at the parish. But I think we've got an opportunity to point out how natural it can be, but to say, don't stop that prayer you've begun to do as a family. Don't stop breaking open scripture at home once we're back at liturgy. So I just think it could be a real grace that we have this opportunity to really amplify what it means in our homes to be the domestic church and to bring that faith into the house on a daily basis with friends, with extended family members. That could be, in fact, a gift of this period, but we also don't want to miss the opportunity, right, to call people's attention to the way in which they continue to practice the faith and that they can continue to do. To go back to what Father Frank said, it not only will strengthen their own relationship with the Lord, but it will certainly strengthen the witness of the whole community to what it means to be disciples.
I know that this time of social isolation where social distancing has been that for my family, that, you know, we have the regular rhythm of going to the early morning Sunday mass with our 1-year-old, but this season has caused us to sort of readjust. And so early on, we had been watching some masses over Zoom with the priest friend, which was really meaningful. But during Holy Week, my wife and I decided, you know, let's not just watch the mass, let's do a liturgy of the word ourselves. And we had done that once early on. And it was, as we reflected kind of a couple weeks late, we realized, you know, that was actually the most meaningful prayer time that we had, was when we led that prayer together. And so I certainly hope that's a practice that my family continues. It certainly sort of nudges us in that direction, right? To remember that we belong to one another, and that we have to live that out. I married an East Coaster, and my mother-in-law was commenting that as she was going on walks in the neighborhood, and I'm from the Midwest, as she was going on walks in the neighborhood, all the neighbors were kind of out and chatting. And she thought to herself, this must be what the Midwesterners and the Southerners do all the time, just naturally talking to their neighbors. But she was remarking how nice it was. And I think there is a sense of that, right? That we, because we spend so much time on our devices, like we are now even, we sort of can be trapped up in our homes. And so this time sort of forcing us to be in our homes opens us up to the hunger we have to be with one another.
Yeah, Jonathan, I think that's a great point. You know, talking from that, moving from, you know, the tradition of mass to making something that's still personal and still tangible. And I think that's one of the challenges that we have, right? Our faith is essentially incarnational. God became man. So then, I guess, say a little bit more about that. How do we then maintain that tangibility, that personal closeness, while, like you said, we're also faced with Zoom calls and webinars that can be so impersonal?
Yeah, you know, I think what strikes me about that incarnational reality, right, how human it is and how God dignified that, is a comment, Father Frank, that you made in a conversation with me a few weeks ago, which is about communication and relationship. And that I think in this time of Zoom calls, as you said, Brian, it's easy to default to a unidirectional form of communication. So like I was saying earlier, we watched that Zoom mass, but there's only so much you can participate through a screen. It's a little harder than in person, right? And it's not actual doing the work of liturgy and when we gather in person. Or I think our catechesis in this country and in most places is like that. And there's a lot of good to it, but it's unidirectional, right? There's a presenter who's distributing content to you who receives it. But a relationship with Jesus Christ is not unidirectional. And an accompanying relationship or spiritual mentorship isn't just one way. It works in both directions. That God, you know, it always strikes me that Jesus asked, I think, 3 times more questions in scripture than he did answer the questions. And yesterday in the gospel, we hear Jesus on the road to Emmaus when he kind of catches up, kind of quick walks up to the disciples to catch up to where they are. And the first thing he says is a question. He doesn't say, hey, it's me, guys, I'm here. Or you guys are going the wrong way, you have to get back. The first thing he says is, tell me about these things that you're talking about, discussing about as you walk together along the way, right? He prompts us to ask something of us. And so when we talk about our faith is incarnational, how do we cultivate that closeness? The first thing I think of is cultivating a relationship with people. And using technology to be relational, which it can very much be. But that requires a two-way dialogue, which requires that great virtue of listening that is too often absent from a lot of our pastoral ministry or pastoral outreach.
I think also, pastorally, I work with undergraduates at Catholic University and also with teaching. And one of the things that I've seen in one group that I chaplain is that they've created all these ways to meet, to support one another, to build up each other, to pray with one another, to continue on serving in a variety of ways that has really been quite striking, because I think that they want to continue to be incarnational, incarnate faith, and using the technology that's there. So, you know, we're going to do this via Zoom, but it's not going to be unidirectional. We're going to still be able to joke with one another, to still have time together. And one of the things we do with Catholic Apostolate Center, for example, is that we have twice a week now a virtual coffee break. And we talk about everything but work. And that has been really Great. It's been fascinating just to listen to everybody, have an opportunity to just share about a variety of things. And I think it's that kind of support that's critically important at a moment like this, where we are accompanying one another in different ways. Some of it is very intentional. For example, some of the spiritual direction that I do has gone online, and that I wouldn't have done in the same way. It would have been much more always in person. But I think there are ways of doing that in which it's not unidirectional, but instead the intentionality is to really accompany and to be present to one another and mutual. And you know, where two or three are gathered, even if it's electronically, Christ is present.
I also think we have a great opportunity right now. Sometimes it's hard for us to begin those conversations or to enter into a serious conversation because we're afraid the other person might think we're prying, or it's a, you know, faith we sometimes think of as really personal. And so we're hesitant to ask someone a personal question. But goodness, in these days, we have lots of opportunity to ask questions that give you an opportunity to respond seriously. What does it feel like not being able to go to Mass? What does it feel like to be really worried about your elderly parents and you're not able to visit with them and you're not sure how they're doing and they're not very good, right, FaceTiming or Zooming? And so we have this chance to ask those more serious questions and to welcome the kind of conversation that gives us a chance to say, I'm feeling the same way. I'm going to remember to keep that in prayer for you. And then all of a sudden, right, you have that sense of being accompanied. You have that sense of saying, hey, I've got a friend here. And Jesus is part of the mix. And so I think hopefully that too will make us feel more comfortable, that the more personal questions come easier these days. And so let's put ourselves in a place where we're also ready to listen when we ask the question and give a chance for people to open up their hearts a little bit more, maybe.
And I love that phrase, Dr. Timoney, that prayer, though always personal, is never private. And that while faith, as Brian said, is incarnational, this reality, which Christianity is essentially, it's also social, essentially, that Christ was born not as an individual in this world with these powerful rights of autonomy. He was born into a family in great dependent, the greatest dependency as a human newborn that cannot stay alive by him or herself. Newborns rely upon that social structure. And I think that one of the great ironies of this time is, even though, you know, Zoom is blowing up, you know, nationally and trying to figure out, all these different tech companies are trying to figure out how to leverage this financially and otherwise, and we are in fact so socially connected digitally, that we're also experiencing in these past years and in this time in particular, some of the greatest social loneliness and isolation that we've ever experienced in our culture. And it's this great irony of, shouldn't people feel happier and more connected? But in fact, it's not the case. And we know studies tell us that more people live alone today in America than ever before in American history. And so people are living by themselves. They feel more and more isolated. And I think that in particularly impacts two groups, the young and the old. And Pope Francis always connects these two, this alliance between generations, he says. And there's this really heartbreaking story that made some national news in the fall of this 90-year-old woman who wrote a note to her neighbor that just said, would you please be my friend? I'm 90 and I live alone and all my friends have passed away and I'm lonely and scared. I pray for someone to be my friend. That there's another story of a woman who offered on Facebook to be invited over to anyone's house, a grandmother. She said, I can be your grandma and I'll cook the whole Thanksgiving dinner. I just have nowhere to go for Thanksgiving this year. And that really, like, you know, hurts my heart to think about that. But there are millions of Americans, young and old, who feel this great loneliness. In fact, 1 in 3 millennials say they feel lonely, and almost 1 in 4 say they have no friends. And so I think this accompaniment takes on a more aggressive responsibility for us as Catholic Christians to reach out to people who are in need.
Yeah. And, you know, Jonathan, we're seeing that even in our questions and chats that are coming in right now of people who are expressing loneliness and isolation. So it's a very real problem. To get back to something you just said, though, you know, you talked about family and neighbors, and we've talked about this before, right? We all have family, we all have neighbors. We all, most of us at least, have friends, these people that it's not necessarily a stretch to reach out to. And maybe it's actually a little easier now because of the lack of presence, right? When it's easy to reach out to your family, you might not want to, but now in this time where you don't know the next time you'll have a family reunion or the next time you can go to your neighbor's house for a barbecue, you're finding new ways. So in this time of family Zoom calls and coworker happy hours that might have never happened, Father Frank, how do we accompany those people that are kind of normally within our circle, but we might not reach out to in this way normally with these Zoom calls and these new ways?
And also phone calls. I know I'm underscoring that, but I've been underscoring that for weeks and weeks, as Jonathan will attest. And I think it comes out in some of our chats. Sister Joanna was talking about, you know, she felt that was a good way for to make those connections. And Colin Campbell, who's the author of this book, you know, what's some of the formation? And Tom Carey mentions, you know, like it's listening can be kind of difficult. And it really is cultivating some of the active listening skills. And you can just go and look that up. Right. And really, it's what Jesus did. It's an open-ended question, and we don't think through our response immediately. We just stop and listen to that other person fully and intentionally. It may be more difficult than we would if we had the person right there, but we can cultivate that ability over time and learn some skills related to that. And it means not thinking immediately about what our next response is and asking questions that are open-ended, as Jesus did. What sort of things, when he asked those disciples on the road? And so they're very basic kinds of things, but they're the moments in which we are showing that we are truly listening to the other person and hearing what they have to say, and then responding in a way that's not immediate advice, that's not just throwing out something to say, but instead draws them out even more. Because this crushing loneliness is not only for people who are young, it's also those who are elderly and isolated. And now we can also push that. There's some comments about the people who are more interior, more quote unquote introverted. And so that can lead to more focus on depression and kind of spiraling down that can occur. And so it means then our intentionality reaching out is not pushing, but it's more consistent. That even if we've tried once, some even mentioned about their own priests in their parishes, it's not just a one and done. I remember doing hospital chaplaincy, that it means, and also it's true also when doing collegiate chaplaincy, it's just showing up. And yeah, the more you show up, the more, you know, and so showing up means a phone call and just leaving a message. It means a text. It means maybe reaching out in some other way or inviting somebody into one of those, you know, gatherings that might be happening online. Things along those lines, I think, are some of the ways. But, you know, with family, we had our first Zoom call with my mother right before Easter. But I've noticed that I'm much more intentional in calling her. Mm. You know, she's a very active person and often is out and doing things. So I find that I call her much more often than I normally would. And it's been good because we've been able to have some really wonderful conversations because we were able to focus a bit more on being intentional in that way.
Yeah. And, you know, we're getting down to our last 10 or 15 minutes before we question our forgot with us. And Father Frank, you made some great points about those in isolation. You know, Dr. Timoney, I wonder, we also have to think about those who suffer from things like addiction, mental health issues, people who are the victims of domestic violence. And in this time where we're forced into places where maybe we don't have a stable environment at home, or maybe there's triggers around for addictions or for habits. How do we reach out to those that we know that are affected by these things? And like Father said, not be pushy, not be invasive. How do we really accompany those people in this challenging time?
First of all, Brian, I think just the realization that we should think about people who may be in really vulnerable situations, right? And calling them to mind is the first step. Someone had asked a question about where are pastors and our priests and what are they doing? I would certainly think maybe a call, if it's someone with whom you go to church, right? A call to the pastor or the parochial vicar or one of the pastoral ministers to say, hey, have you checked in on so-and-so? Have you heard anything? Maybe it would be great if you called one day and I'll call a few days later. A couple of neighbors who are millennials and who live alone, and I have gotten into the habit, because going to the grocery store is such an adventure these days, of saying, hey, I'm off to the grocery store. Do you need anything? Yeah. And what's been great is when they need something, then you have the ability to drive by their house or walk by their house and leave it on the porch, or, you know, they come out and give you a wave and thank you. And so it's a reason to also be able to touch base and to see them and to see how they're looking, right? And do they seem okay, or do they seem really stressed in their face? And so I think if it's possible to be able to get a read of the bigger situation, I'm always also keeping them in prayer. But I think this is a great time for you to make the effort to rely on the pastoral staff at your parish or other people you know who they're friends with, and to say, let's get a couple of us being intentional. And so they're hearing from someone on a really regular basis, and someone is able to see them and to see how they look, and to make sure they're getting out and taking walks if they're able to do that in the place that they live.
I think adding to that, for people who are hurting, I think it's good first just for us to acknowledge the need to reach out to those people who may have particular, whether physical or mental health needs, they get sort of pressed or exacerbated during this time. And just to find ways to be a touch point of outreach. I think we all assume, Brian, you sort of said, you know, everyone has family, everyone has friends. Some people don't. Some people live or they have those people who just don't reach out to them. You know, I think we should all feel a little challenged, a little pricked on our conscience to think through those people who might be most in need. Not that it's our job to fix anyone, but certainly probably is our responsibility just to reach out, to be that sort of the look of Christ, that touch of Christ. I think, you know, a couple things in my mind. One is to sort of be the excuse for people. You know, there's a priest in San Francisco who I worked with that talked about evangelization that way, that sometimes people are just looking for an excuse. And so if you sort of make that initiate something, it's the excuse for them to bring up something. You know, they're not going to do it on their own, but like give people the excuse by asking those great open-ended questions, like Father Frank said, whether it's by praying together. You know, a group of grad school classmates and I started these weekly sort of one-off Zoom weekly calls that sort of developed as starting with Lectio Divina and doing some nice prayer and connection. And we sort of said, let's just keep this up. And, you know, in the midst of this, there are people struggling with some family issues, people going through job changes. It's just been the excuse. And we started praying together. And 2 weeks ago, we just played games online together the whole time and sort of joked around. But it was just that good opportunity for us to be together. And I also think, too, you know, we also have to recognize that two-way street works even with those people who are hurting or who we think are in need, that we can easily default to this mode of, well, I'm the superhero helping this person. But to recognize that relationships are always two ways, even when people are in need. And so maybe there's something or a piece of advice that you could ask for someone or thank the person for a gift that they give to you, whether interpersonally or otherwise. And so I think there's ways always for us to nudge ourselves to reach out.
And I think the call is even more distinct now to have the courage. You know, Dr. Timoney talked earlier about grow in this moment, to have the courage to refer as well, and to know when to take a step back and say, I can't handle this. You know, like you said, we're no one's savior, right? Like that was Christ. So to know when to take that step back and acknowledge that. Jonathan, you talked about that priest in San Francisco and about taking moments of evangelization. And obviously, you know, Pope St. Paul VI, you know, said, to paraphrase, evangelization is at the heart of the church and the mission of of all the baptized. How can this time of crisis be seen as a time of evangelization in all the ways we've talked about, in those, you know, dropping off groceries to our neighbors and a wave mm-hmm. from the porch or our Zoom calls and everywhere in between?
Yeah, there has been a lot of research on evangelization of postmodern disciples, or people who sort of know about Jesus because we live in a world that's fluent with religious information, but not necessarily with lived experience or personal relationships. And they say that a lot of the places to start is with building relationships of trust. And so it starts with that trust, and that's curiosity of faith. And I think the online access to information and to religious practice is a great actual gift that this time gives to us. It's just not the end of the road. So a new study out by Springtide Research identified that almost 46% of millennials, especially those emerging adults, have started a new religious practice. They say that they've started some new spiritual work. And that 43% have participated in a religious service online, which is kind of surprising to me that people would seek that out, right? But it certainly tells you that there is this curiosity that people have. But I think it's important to recognize that curiosity ought to lead to a dialogue of faith, that it's not sufficient just to have a video program or a religious service online. There's a reason we have a Sunday obligation in person to pray together as a community and to worship. What strikes me from that study too is that half of those people who went to a service online or watched something said that they don't have anyone to talk to about how they're feeling in this COVID time. So you'd think that these are the most connected, the uber connected folks, but half don't have anyone. And I remember, and Susan and Father Frank, you might remember too, a survey we did locally in the DC, Maryland area about 3 or 4 years ago on young people. And we asked them if they have a friend at their church. And more than half of the people who filled it out, and many of whom went to Mass every day, said they don't even have a friend and certainly don't have a mentor. And so it strikes me that, again, it's what's important in this time for churches, speaking sort of institutionally as well, is to really go back and to revisit what Paul VI talks about as this process of evangelization, lined out in documents from Evangelii Nuntiandi to Joy of the Gospel, the National Directory for Catechesis, Living as Missionary Disciples, and U.S. Bishops. There's this process-oriented approach, and certainly that encounter with Jesus Christ is essential and can be present in many ways online. But to Father Frank's point, it takes a dialogue, it takes a phone call or a relationship to continue that conversation. And unfortunately, studies are showing that that's what we haven't yet got to into our pastoral ministry, is that dialogue. The webinar that we did a couple weeks ago with the Catholic Apostolate Center that was put in the chat, the link to that was put in the chat, was about parishes who have made that commitment to do phone calls. And they've identified that they've added hundreds of people to their email lists. They've delivered groceries to people. A priest who was on the call from Southern Maryland said, I've got calls for new baptisms, just because it was an excuse to reach out. And so that's been one of the things that pops up to me, Brian, is how can we build personal relationships into the ministry we're already doing that might start online, but can't certainly end there.
And Mike Downs asks the question, how do you suggest specifically you follow up with people online and develop these relationships with trust? And I want to again bring the phone call piece up. A number of people who have had these calls or have had this that kind of outreach have said, wondered if the church was looking for money or that kind mm-hmm. of thing. And when they said, no, we're just calling to see how you are and how are things and so forth. And it became a moment, because I think we have to recognize evangelization, again, is not about those people out there who are distant from Christ. It's the people who are week to week, who can we assist them in becoming living as apostles or missionary disciples and going forth on and forming them so that they can go forth. One of the ways I think online is just simply by posting things that in places that people wouldn't expect. Because a number of people sometimes will keep, especially Catholics, will keep their faith as kind of this thing over here, especially online, because they don't necessarily want to witness that. But I've noticed that more people have been doing that not just simply maybe sharing something that they heard or whatever that they thought was helpful to them. And it engendered a conversation. Another person reached out to them and they responded and it began a dialogue. One thing that I normally didn't post on LinkedIn, for example. So I started to post some reflections that I've been doing that, at the request of the center's team on, you know, just a weekly, very short five, six minute piece. I was surprised at the response on a platform that I just don't normally put. And it was just a simple post, but the reaction and the dialogue has been fascinating for me to see. So I think even in those places where we don't necessarily think, you know, how we have those images, you know, there's Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn, you know, and we have different picture or whatever for all of those, or Twitter, all of those different things. One of the realities is, can we bring faith out into that moment? And then the other piece, as I said, is just, you know, literally picking up the phone, and that can engender a faith conversation.
Building both on what Father Frank and Jonathan have said, I want to add here, I think it's really important for those of us in pastoral leadership to begin to help people think about what's the difference between simply being more aware of how nice it is to have a community and the kind of community you experience at church and with your parish community. And so that is to say, it builds both the responsibility of us to be present to the other, but also to say, it's really easy to be at home on Sunday and to live stream a mass and say, hey, okay, I've been to mass today. This is great. And my sister who lives in Sweden has said that the Swedes' participation in these online religious services have skyrocketed. And it's one of the most secular countries, right, in the world. And so one, it's tapping into a need, I imagine, right? The fears, the big questions that we have. But I think, as someone alluded to in our questions, we don't want to say, yep, you can consume this experience of faith. You can consume this experience of worshiping together at home via technology. I think we really have to begin to highlight what makes coming together that much more gratifying, that much more necessary, so that we come back ready to really deepen the communal bonds that a parish community should have, and to continue to be present in people's lives in the way that we're learning learning to, because it is a lot easier, right, to stay at home on Sunday mornings. And so what's going to make people really appreciate what they've missed in not being able to come together for liturgy and for parish ministry? I think that's something we as leaders need to begin to start that conversations in the ways that we can, as we're hopefully getting closer to those times when we'll be back together for liturgy.
Yeah, and settle for the online. You know, it's easy to look at your YouTube videos of mass and think, oh my gosh, we had 300 people watch mass, and sort of pat ourselves on the back or feel good. And there's a goodness in that. But again, it's about an invitation to a process of relationship. And so we shouldn't mistake those stats with this assumption, oh good, everyone's just gonna come back to church. As you're saying, Susan, we have to have a plan. And if people don't come back to church, you know, certainly there's a sense of their freedom that we have to respect, but there's also maybe we're missing the mark in how we're reaching out and inviting. And so even to think now, if your parish doesn't have an email list to invite people into small groups or things like that, maybe start now. Post every time you have an online mass. If you're interested in being connected into a small community or in deeper into community in our parish, click here and collect people's names and information so that when we are allowed to gather, we're ready. And if the limitations stay at 10 or 20 or 30 or 40 people, we as a church have to think creatively about how to gather at 10 or 20 or 30 or 40 people, not just wait for everyone to, quote, come back to church.
Yeah, that's a great point. And, you know, I think it's just about time for us to move onto our questions. We've referenced a few of them and we've been getting some really great ones. It's nice to see that you can upvote questions. I didn't know you could do that on this platform. So it's great to see not only are people asking questions, but people are saying, yeah, that's the question I had too. The last point we were going to touch on, I just want to throw this in briefly because I think it's so important, is the conversation on self-care. We talk a lot about how do I care for others? How do I accompany others? But we have to remember, as we've said, it's reciprocal. It's mutual. We also have to care for ourselves. I was listening to a podcast and they were talking about recognizing that this entire situation of COVID for every single person in the world is an individual process of grief, and realizing that we're all grieving something. And for some people, unfortunately, it is the loss of a loved one. But for almost all of us, it's the loss of a schedule, of a routine, of the ability to in some places just step outside and take a walk. So naming that and caring for yourself. And I would suggest if you go to CatholicApostolateCenter.org, we have self-care resources with SLI Connect. You take a look at those and also remember that, you know, the process of accompaniment isn't just one person acting like a pitcher, filling the empty cup of the person they're walking with, but that we do this together. We do this as a relationship, and remembering to care for yourself as well. So moving on to our questions, and like I said, we have so many great ones. Let's see. So we touched on this a little bit, but I think it's good to kind of go back to it. Anna is asking, how do we encourage parishioners to not just be consumers? I know Father Frank just said a little bit about that, but Jonathan, I think, you know, you brought up this point. I think it'd be great. Like, what are the suggestions? How do we engage those to be active participants in the faith, not just, you know, picking at little things, but to really get into this and to see this as relational?
Yeah, I think, you know, that's a great phrase of being consumeristic about how we approach faith. The starting point, though, has some positives that people are engaging, right? And so I think it's how do we build upon the ways that people are engaging in faith and to invite them to walk more deeply into that experience, both personally in their life of prayer and community and communally in the life of a parish or a small community. And so I think it's again, assessing maybe at a parish level, what are our touch points? What are the ways we have people involved? And so if we've got a lot of people coming to Mass, but then they don't follow through with volunteering in the parish or in becoming more regularly involved, okay, what are ways we can invite people specifically? And I think it goes back to what Jesus did in the gospel yesterday, right? He called people by name. He walked with them. He walked a long stretch of road together that we have to be willing to do ourselves or expecting others to enter into. And so I think the first step for helping people to move beyond maybe sort of an ankle-deep experience of faith or a consumeristic experience of the practice of faith is to build upon what they have by investing in them personally and walking with them, which is going to take a longer period of time, and it's going to be slower work. But goodness, we're certainly saving hours every week from planning events. And if we really carve out hours, say every Tuesday afternoon, I make 10 phone calls. Over the course of just this next few weeks, that would bear, I think, a measurable fruit in the life of a particular parish community.
I would like to jump in and add here, I think it would be great to give our parishioners an opportunity to do sort of a self-assessment, to say, hey, where did you feel really good about the things that you were able to do in your own faith journey during this time of pandemic? And what didn't you feel like you could do, and how can we help you learn that? So for example, if all of a sudden you realized, well, you don't know how to pray a rosary as well as you thought you might, or you don't really know what a novena is, but it seemed like there were a lot of novenas being shared, right? Or you don't know actually what to do to walk into the quiet of a church and to center yourself and be able to talk with the Lord, then can we offer a workshop on, you know, traditional Catholic prayers and how you pray them alone or with others? Or could we say, hey, you really wanted to read a Catholic classic and you weren't sure what those were. Can we offer a book group that begins to dive in, right? I think we have an opportunity for people to be able to say, here is where I need help, both in my spiritual growth and maybe also in what it means to be a disciple, and how can we respond with a short retreat experience or an adult ed opportunity, right, on a Sunday. Sometimes I think people don't know what it is that they need. I feel like now we have a moment that they might better be able to articulate where they would like to grow in their own faith.
A couple people have asked in the questions, you know, we talked about reaching out to those that we know without being invasive, but what about when we haven't been reached out to, right? We've talked about the phone calls and all this, but we have, when we haven't been reached out to by our parish, by our pastor, by the group, the formation group or small faith sharing group that we're a part of our community, what do we do? When do we know to reach out and how do we do that without seeming pushy? We know that our parishes and the staffs are so busy right now, and many of them have reduced in size. How can we engage with them because to have our needs met as well without being invasive?
I think most people won't find it invasive in terms of a phone call in particular. And again, it doesn't have to be the pastoral staff. It can be a group of volunteers. There's one of our collaborators, a former staff member, Father Andrew St. Hilaire, who's up in is a parochial vicar up in St. Francis Xavier in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania. He organized a group of parishioners who were, many of whom were sitting home and were looking for something additional to do. And then it built from there. And in fact, there's a script that ADW has, Archdiocese of Washington has, that we have on our COVID-19 resources. But I think in general, it's a matter of moving beyond this attitude of, well, we'll wait till people come to us. They're not coming to us. They're not able to. So that means that we have to go forth. And this is what the church has been teaching. This isn't new, different, and strange. And as Jonathan noted, if we do have some additional time to be able to utilize it in that way, and in a ministerial way, but also in the way of apostolate, to be that we don't have to wait for somebody to tell us to do this. And I think many people will, and there will always be those who will reject, who will say, you know, leave me alone. I'm going through my, maybe swing back around. You know, that happens in ministry. That happens in evangelization, where there'll be that person who just puts you at arm's length or rejects. But that doesn't mean we don't keep persevering. Not being invasive and intrusive, but there is a matter of perseverance, because everybody, this is not a normal time. And so therefore we have to give people room as they're working on their feelings and their concerns about this, and maybe even some struggles in faith as a result.
And I think too, it's valuable to mention that it sort of sounds, or it can sound kind of nice and easy. Oh, I'll just make a couple phone calls. It'll be great. That it's practicing, as Father Frank said, that art of listening and literally Googling active listening questions. And I'm sure you'll find some great resources that sort of help to inform ourselves about how to be better at active listening, but also might be a long journey. It might be saying, not only can I call these 50 people once, but who are the people who maybe need or would benefit from a more regular conversation? And am I willing to set aside time to do that? Not that we can be responsible for everyone. I think that was something we had discussed as a group earlier, that there is this fear or pressure of, oh my gosh, how can I possibly accompany everyone in my life? And the good news is you can't. But it is to really be increasingly attentive to who God places on our hearts. And I was sort of thinking through a silly little acronym for this, because we're Catholics, so we come up with acronyms or abbreviations. So I was thinking of the word SHARP, that thinking about, you know, who are the people who live on our street? Who are the people in our lives who might be hurting? Who are people in our affinity groups, if we are in a book club already, or people we went to school with, et cetera? Who are we related to? And then finally, who's in our phone book? As just places to start, if you're wondering or trying to encourage others to reach out. We already have a lot of people in our lives, our family, our neighbors. That's a great place to start.
I also think, in addition to making use of the telephone, particularly if we're talking about this in the context of pastoral staff, if you don't already use FlockNote, looking into something like FlockNote, which gives the pastoral team a chance to send a message, right, via text messaging to parishioners, just checking in with them, you know, maybe a nice one line from the gospel that particularly spoke to them, and email, right? I know one priest has been emailing the Sunday homily out for people's personal reflection. That's a great way to stay in touch. And so using those things that might seem a little less personal, but you've got the opportunity to make it personal and to let the other people know, hey, I'm thinking about you. And so I think that that's the flock note kind of mechanism, I think, is just another great way to build community in a digital platform.
Yeah, Jonathan, you touched on one of our questions with the active listening piece, and it got some applause in the chat. We might find resources online for active listening, but maybe ones that don't speak to the current context. If you find an article, how to active listen on Zoom, please send it to us via email. But I think a good suggestion is when you see those things, really spend time with whatever article or tips you see, but also think, how can I translate those into my current context? Right? How do I translate facial expression, posture, my verbal signs of listening and understanding? And how do I translate those into that context? Because we can't expect that the same way and every way that we would interact with each other in person will work via Zoom. But what are those bits that do, and how can I translate those? I think we have time for one last question. And I think it's a really good one. It actually comes to us from Colleen Campbell, who is one of the authors of our book, The Art of Accompaniment, as Father Frank noted earlier. And she asks this great question. We very specifically chose the word apostolate for the reasons that Father talked about earlier. But that also means that we have a certain level of commitment to accompaniment, that it's not just this thing that we do. We can't be blasé about it. So Colleen asks, how do we form ourselves to accompany others well? Take for Zoom calls, for instance. You know, if we're expecting our pastoral ministers and those who engage in this apostolate on a regular basis outside of COVID to be formed well, we should probably do the same in these contexts. So how do we form ourselves well to engage in accompaniment?
It seems to me, first and foremost, to be attentive to our own relationship with the Lord, to make sure that we're spending time in conversation with the Lord, to sit with Scripture, right, and to have those images that speak to us in a way that we can share them with others. And I think to ask for the courage, right, and the grace to be confident that we'll know when to ask the right question at the right time, and how much either to say or how much to draw another person into the conversation. But I think if we reflect on the ways in which people have taught us how to accompany, and say to those, what of those things come most naturally to me? That's what people respond to, I think, most willingly, is when it seems natural and real and shows concern.
I agree 100% with what Susan said. I think it starts with our lived relationship with Jesus Christ, and to continue to nourish that and to sort of start and start again when we feel like we've sort of hit a wall or a dead end. That's the Christian life, is to start again. I think too, as I mentioned before, looking back on our own experience of the people who have mentored or been accompaniers to us, and seeing what was of value in that experience to me, and then reflecting upon how I can share that with another person. There was is wonderful writing on spiritual mentorship or accompaniment by Pope Francis in his post-synodal apostolic exhortation, Christus Vivit, Christ is Alive, quoting young people from a pre-synod meeting. It's a really lovely couple paragraphs on the qualities of a mentor that I would lift up as a good place to start to skim through. And then also just sort of reflecting on our own gifts. You know, each of us has different gifts or affects that leads us to accompany people well. And they're going to be different. And so it's reflecting on, when have you been complimented? When have people really valued your perspective or your advice? And to sort of sift back through family and friends and colleagues to sort of build up that confidence and that boldness, like Susan said, to be willing to step out in the particular way that God has gifted us to do so.
And I think that's, this entire book is as an ebook. We put it up earlier, catholicapostolatecenter.org/accompaniment. That whole section that Jonathan was just talking about in Christus Vivit is broken out and is written on in that about the qualities of a mentor and some of the practical things that can be brought over to online. I think sometimes people think that that's just so difficult, so challenging, so this, that. really, I think it's more a matter of we're not fully comfortable with it. But as with any type of active listening, we become more comfortable the more that we do it. And so the more that we try, the more that we go at it, yes, we may fail in different things, but we learn from that and we go from there. And to know that Christ is with us in all of that.
Well, thank you all. Thank you for our questions and for everyone who tuned in. Before we close, I think Jonathan has a prayer for us that works so well with our conversation, with our current context.
Yeah, thank you, Brian. As we were discussing as a team, one of the things that we had talked about was that it can feel very ominous to accompany all of these people, especially when we work in a parish or something. It's not possible to accompany in this sort of depth hundreds or thousands of people. But to remember that that's not what the Lord calls us to, right? He calls us into one-on-one relationships with us, a few people, and to certainly share that vision with others. And there's a lovely prayer called Prophets of a Future Not Our Own that spoke to me that I'd like to offer as our closing prayer together. It helps now and then to step back and take a long view. The kingdom is not only beyond our efforts, it's even beyond our vision. We accomplish in our lifetime only a tiny fraction of the magnificent enterprise that is God's work. Nothing we do is complete, which is a way of saying that the kingdom always lies beyond us. No statement says all that could be said. No prayer fully expresses our faith. No confession brings perfection. No pastoral visit brings wholeness. No program accomplishes the church's mission. No set of goals and objectives includes everything. This is what we are about. We plant seeds that one day will grow. We water seeds already planted, knowing they hold future promise. We lay foundations that will need further development. We provide yeast that produces far beyond our capabilities. We cannot do everything, and there is a sense of liberation in realizing that. This enables us to do something and to do it very well. It may be incomplete, but it is a beginning, a step along the way, an opportunity for the Lord's grace to enter and do the rest. We may never see the end results, but that's the difference between the master builder and the worker. We are workers, not master builders, ministers, not messiahs. We are prophets of a future, not our own. Amen.
Thank you, Jonathan, for sharing that prayer with us. I'd like to thank Father Frank, Dr. Timoney, and Jonathan Lewis again for presenting and for joining in this great conversation. And of course, to thank all of you who tuned in and joined us for this conversation. We'll have a recording of this webinar uploaded to our YouTube channel within the next week, so keep an eye out there, and on our website, catholicapostolatecenter.org, for the link, as well as these other resources that we've discussed during the course of our conversation. You're welcome to share both this link and the rest of our resources with anyone that you would like. As always, our content is free to share. If you haven't yet found us on social media, please like and follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram in the hope that we'll continue to reach more people with spreading the message of the gospel. And in the words of St. Vincent Pallotti, may the charity of Christ urge you on. Thank you, and God bless.
Thank you. Take care, everyone.